time to dip into your head mailbag and answer some of the questions that have been sent in by you, the humble and ignorant listeners. The following question was posted in the forum of Neil's old website, newsburp.com, by a reader called Matt, on May 3rd, 2004, in response to a post by a Canadian visitor about a video. For the purpose of context, I have replaced Neil's name with mine in the following quote. Matt writes, "Hey Raz man, that was a cool music video. Unfortunately, I'm currently using dial-up, so it took a long time for me to be able to watch. I have a question, Dr. Stuan. If you were going somewhere that you don't want to go, do you get there as fast as you would if you did want to go there? Or does it naturally slow you down when you don't want to do something?" Well, Matt, that's an excellent question. I often have to go places that I don't want to go. Yesterday I had to go to the toilet, and I was in the middle of an important business phone call, so obviously I didn't want to go. Now, I believe that when you have a dilemma, what you should do is take a direct approach. The shortest route between two points is always a straight line. So what I did, obviously, was pee my pants. It was the perfect solution, and it had come to me in a dream a couple of nights earlier originally. When I woke up after the dream, I seriously considered going to the doctor, because I don't think it's normal to have dreams about peeing myself. But then I calmed down and taught myself some sense, and within hours I had completely forgotten and was happily watching my new DVD box set of Planet Earth, which I purchased approximately 43 months after you posted your question. Now, I should point out that in 1964, the world record for getting somewhere slowly was set by a young gentleman from Norway, who set out to school at 8:30 in the morning and managed not to arrive there until 54 years later. And boy was he in trouble when he got there. A note was sent home, a black mark was put on his report card, and his dog, who usually followed him home, was long gone, and when he finally reached his school, the dog's great-grandson was following him. And then, 20 years later, Queen released their highly acclaimed album, The Works, and there was no turning back. Their innovative videos, guitar solos, and newly found ability to co-write stunned fans all over the world. Now, another 20 years on, we have witnessed the fall of Saddam Hussein. We've got rid of two Bee Gees, thus making Dennis Leary's famous "one down, three to go" quote seem sadly out of date, and I've become a cat lover. So, what does the future hold? Well, in 20 years' time, I believe that, thanks to staring at computer screens all day, we'll all have evolved into owls, which will be really cool. I've always wanted to be able to rotate my head 360 degrees or more. If you turn further than 360 degrees, you can see what's under the ground. And that's a particularly useful skill to have if you are a research scientist who is interested in worms, sewage, decomposing waste, or clay. Let's not worry about the future, though. The present is what's here at the moment. Although while I've been recording this, the present has elapsed and has become the past. Damn it. Sorry about that. But to answer your question, Matt, yes and no.
Past 11 on a Sunday night, and I've just realised that I think it's snowing, so I'm going to go out in the back garden now and investigate and see what all this is about. I think it's something to do with the weather, but we'll find out soon enough. Now, I should point out that I'm just wearing a t-shirt. Now, I want to experience the true coldness of everything. Now, I can see already from my black barbecue that there's white stuff on it, so it may well be snowing, so let's go out a little further. Yep, it's snow alright. I have washed my hair in the last couple of days. That's why I felt so certain that it might be snow and or as white. And ironically I put an old freezer out in the back garden earlier today, and that's covered in ice too, even though it's not plugged in. So it's just a goddamn miracle it's snowing. So we'll go back inside now because it's fucking cold. And I think we'll go into the nice warm kitchen and I'll have a word with you, the humble and ignorant listener, because I didn't just come on here to talk about snow. Well, actually I did, but it turned out that I could only get around 1 minute and 16 seconds of material out of it, so we'll have to change the subject now. Let's see, what can we talk about? Well, there's cats, I suppose, but I've pretty much run that subject into the ground. I mean, I'm always going on about Harry and Pippi, our two cats, but I mean, what is there left to say that they're cats? I mean, you've gathered that from the fact that I call them cats. I mean, that's what pronouns and adverbs and nouns are all about, describing things and saying what they are and what they do and how they do it. So my grasp from an early age of the English language has made sure that all of that is covered and that you are well aware of what's going on in my life. So perhaps I should speak less well and be a little more vague so that I have to spend more time explaining things, and then I could stretch the show out further than it goes. I mean, back in show 35, the previous one, I spent an hour in a hotel toilet talking shite, and a whole 60 minutes out of that hour, and I tell you, it was absolutely fucking fantastic. I really enjoyed the editing process. I'm all proud of myself because I managed to fill up a whole hour of audio. But I don't think that's going to happen this time. I mean, I'm here, I'm forced to drink decaffeinated coffee now. I'm just pouring some out here. Well, actually pouring the hot water out, I'm not pouring the coffee out. The coffee leaves are already in the mug, and I was just pouring the boiling water on top of the coffee leaves to heat them up and to moisten them so that it becomes a nice liquid coffee drink. And that's a beautiful mug of coffee. It's absolutely beautiful looking mug of coffee. It's just when you start drinking it, you realise it's decaffeinated crap. Let me just get that in the jar now and tell you about it. It's a Tesco Gold decaffeinated freeze-dried and strength 3, whatever that means. Oh, there's a strength guide on the back. There's 1 through 5. Strength number 1 is mild. Strength number 2 is mild stroke medium. Then rather predictably straight, strength number 3, which I'm going to drink now, is medium. And there's medium stroke strong and strong. That's perfect. So that's absolutely fine, which is unfortunate. If it wasn't fine, I could give out about it for a couple of minutes and fill in up some time that way. But it's absolutely fine. There's no problems with it. There's nothing I can criticise about it. Basically, I'm out for material today. And that's why the minute I noticed that there's some white stuff on the window, I ran out with my portable recording device and thought, oh, here's something I can use. Here's some material, because other podcasters do it. I mean, you hear the likes of Frank Edward Nora on The Overnightscape, one of the podcasts I listen to. If every time anything happens to him, he manages to make a 4-hour podcast out of it, and a bloody good one at that. Lucky bastard. And he goes to the bus stop and he misses the bus and he gets out his recording device and he goes, look, I've missed the bus and here's 10 million subjects that I just happen to have in my back pocket to talk about while we wait for the next bus. And I wish I could do that, but I don't commute as much as Frank, and I have to stick with the boring little topics like snow, which happens about once a year in Ireland, because it's not Iceland, it's Ireland. Now, perhaps I should learn to misspell or acquire some learning disorder. But I think it's a little bit late for that. If you acquire a learning disorder when you've already learned everything, when you're up to age 32, as I will be shortly, there's no point to acquiring a learning disability then, because you've already learned everything. You've learned enough anyway to get you through your adult life. So if I were to acquire a learning disability now, it would just mean that I wasn't going to learn another language when I'm 60, or that I'm not going to, might have a little trouble with the next version of Windows, so it wouldn't affect me that much. But if I had a learning disability at age 2, then I wouldn't be talking to you like this now. I'd be talking complete gobbledygook. I'd be going, at best I'd be saying something like, bleh, 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 cat, nim, 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 And the fact that the sound cat came out in the middle of that sentence would just be a pure coincidence. I wouldn't actually be voicing the word cat. I wouldn't know what cat meant. I wouldn't have learnt it. I would just have happened to produce a sound from my mouth that sounded like the word cat and was audibly equivalent to it. So, that's how that works anyway. And, I think I'll turn on the microwave. There we go. Now that's a homing sound you've got in the background. That'll create a little audio diversion. And maybe even some interference if we're lucky. And that'll bring a little bit of interestingness into the recording. I'll try the kettle as well. But that won't make any noise for a couple of minutes. So actually I'm just wasting electricity there. I'll switch the kettle off. Because I want value for my electricity. And actually I've just realised, if I switch the microwave off, it goes bing, and only the noise it makes only lasts for about half a second, but it's a very dramatic noise. It's much more dramatic than the continual hum that the microwave wave makes if you leave it on for 10 minutes. So that's quite interesting now. For 10 minutes of electricity in the microwave, I just get hum for 10 minutes, and because it's a constant background noise, you barely notice it once it's been on for a while. If I just switch the microwave off, which actually is saving electricity, it goes bing, I get great entertainment out of that, and it gets it marks another spot in my podcast where there's an event, and the events are good. The more events you have, the better. In fact, let's have an event now. Let's see. What can we do? Well, I can jump down off the kitchen counter like this. Let's see. It's like a sitting down jump. And what's happened there is that I've just created a new Olympic sport. So that's an event where that involves me creating an event. So that's two events. Well, only one of which will be an Olympic sport. But the other is the event of creating the Olympic sport, which it's not something to be sniffed at. I mean, you don't say when Alexander Graham Bell invented the television, you don't say, oh, he didn't actually make a television program, he just invented television. You don't say that. That's a very important thing. The television would never have been there if Alexander Graham Bell hadn't invented it. So, it was him inventing it was as important as people actually being on TV. I mean, if you see Jay Leno go on the television and he says hello and he starts a show, that's quite an important event in television because it starts an hour of excellent entertainment for you. But Alexander Graham Bell going, look, if I put this into this box, it'll make pictures and people can transmit them in the future. And that may not be a television program in itself, but it's an important factor in contributing to the production of future television programs. So that's something important to bear in mind as well. Now, let's see, where are we? 9 minutes, 12 seconds, 13 seconds, 14 seconds. Now, you may be wondering at this stage why I'm bothering to record at all. I mean, I've made a quite a large amount of audio since Christmas, so I've been quite productive. I mean, there's been no shortage, not like there usually is, so there's no need for me to make all this surplus nonsense. But frankly, I just want to. I mean, you know, I just want to talk to you. The listener, I missed you. It's been 2 days since my pull-up show 35. We got some comments in the guest book, and some people contacted me with things to say about the show. But then it all died down after a day, and I've had nothing since. I've had no contact with the listener, and that's what I need, frankly. I really should have a radio phone in that's on a couple of times a day, maybe. Whenever I need a chat, I should maybe schedule it to come on 3 times a day for an hour each time. And I just get to talk to listeners, like Fraser Crane does on that whole television sitcom. In fact, I'm sure he misses that now. He's just doing Disney things. And I wouldn't be surprised next time you're in the middle of Toy Story 4 if you hear a familiar voice going, hello, and you hear a phone being answered and a lonely voice searching, going, is there anyone there? I want to pretend to talk about psychiatry. And I want some mad woman ringing me saying she's going to kill me or something like that. Because that's why psychiatrists are in it. They want to hear some madness like you would in a movie. You know, you want to hear some dramatic event happen and you want to be involved in this, but not too closely. You want someone to describe the event to you, or describe that they're going to commit the event, or describe that they think they're involved in the event that isn't happening at all because they're hallucinating. And you just get to sit in a chair and listen to this and get paid for it for 8 hours a day. And it's very exciting. It's like being paid to read a book or watch a movie. And his psychiatrists are lucky bastards as far as I'm
Hello.
Concerned.
I'm Dr. Joanne O'Carroll, your lecturer for the Into Your Head Adult Learning Programme. And it's time to have another go at making you less stupid. Now, 10 years ago to this day, the very first ever steam train passed through my hometown. And we all lined the streets to wave as it made its way to the junkyard to get scrapped. And a proud day it was, too. Our scrapyard is one of the best in the world. We destroy things like there's no tomorrow, reducing them to tiny pellets of dense metal in minutes. Anyway, right next door to that scrapyard is the canal. And a while back, I was sitting at the canal bank, waiting to speak to somebody about a personal loan, when I noticed that the sign showing the name of the shop across the road was missing 3 letters. Obviously, I have no idea which letters they were, and the only chance I had of finding out was if I raided the bins at the back of the shop and found some headed stationery belonging to the store, so that I could see what it was called. Unfortunately, the bins are kept in a dark alley to the rear of the building, and the laneway is shared with the large hotel and bar. While I was walking along the alley, I was startled by the sudden sound of glass being smashed as it was dropped into a recycling bin. I got such a fright that I leapt over a wall and found myself in the back garden of a respected criminologist, who, it transpired, was already investigating the signs thing, and had it all under control. So my work there was done. I was superfluous to the situation, no longer needed, cast onto the steaming molehill of life, like a badly formed metaphor that should have featured a dunghill instead of a molehill. With hindsight, though, it's probably all for the best. Despite being an expert on the television programme CSI, to the extent that I am seriously considering naming my next cat Horatio, I am neither qualified nor sufficiently experienced to competently investigate the disappearance of 3 letters from a shop sign. The best theory I could come up with was that they were stolen by some sort of a black market letters agency, who sold them on to the red market to the producers of Sesame Street. Obviously, that theory falls apart immediately when you remember that Sesame Street is usually sponsored by 2 letters and a number, not 3 letters. Anyway, 2 cats walk into a bar. The first cat immediately walks out again and stages a flamboyant, though ultimately unsuccessful, demonstration against the stereotyping of cats as habitual bar visitors. The other cat is a little more chilled out and takes a longer-term view of the situation. He realizes that by making them pay him regular sums of money to appear in bar cat stories, he will, over time, slowly drain the perpetrators of all their funds until eventually they have to stop creating bar cat stories for good. The second cat has a lovely night and gets drunk, but not too drunk, and they all live happily ever after. Well, he did, anyway. The other cat spent the rest of his life wishing he had stayed in the pub that night and not put himself up for ridicule and disrespect in the national newspapers. The only glimmer of hope he had was that the people who cut his picture out of the papers to hang up on their walls would notice that the Sunday Colour episode of Dilbert, on the other side of the page, was particularly funny that day, so they might hang it up the other way round, to brighten up their homes. Unfortunately, that day's episode was one of the clever but obscure ones about some sort of computer issue that nobody ever understands, so the cat was out of luck. Ironically, he was a black cat, and on his way home that night he crossed the paths of at least 17 lucky people, thereby unwittingly changing their lives for the better. Well, I hope I have been of help. I'm tired now, after a hard day of thinking, so if you'll all excuse me, I'm going to go to bed. I've been Dr. Joanne O'Carroll for the Into Your Head Adult Learning Programme.
Now, I hadn't intended to record the show at all tonight, but it was just snowing outside, so I decided to go out and record. I think we seem to have turned this into some sort of a recording session. So to bring a sense of normality to the proceedings, I suppose, we'll have our regular feature, the urination session of the week. I'm going to go into the main bathroom this time, for the first time in about 3 months, I think, because we've had lodgers in the house for most of the season, and I haven't been using the main bathroom at all. I've been letting the lodgers use it. So, maybe this will bring a stop to my recent pattern of finding it difficult to urinate for you. Recently I've found I've had to count myself into urinating. Hopefully it'll come easier this time. I'll tell you what, instead of counting, because I begin to think that just puts pressure on myself. I'll run through the letters of the alphabet instead, and by the time we get to 26, hopefully it'll have happened. I think it'll be fine. So here goes. Drunk a load of water and coffee, so we should be okay. A, B, C, D. Now you notice that because I'm not using numbers, I don't feel I'm counting at all, so I already feel under less pressure to produce something, and I can count the letters at whatever speed I like, because they're not real numbers, you know, who's to say how many seconds there are between the letter B and G, for example, or between the letter, well, those letters aren't even adjacent, so that's irrelevant, but between the letters B and C, for example, or between the letters F and G. I mean, we know that when you're counting from 1 to 10, you're supposed to space out the numbers equally, because it's a type of time that you're counting. I mean, they may not necessarily be a second apart, but they have to be equidistant. If the number 1 and 2 are 2 seconds apart, then the number 2 and 3 should be 2 seconds apart as well. But I don't feel that pressure with letters. I mean, letters aren't about counting. They're not about measuring the amount of time that has elapsed, or measuring the number of things that have elapsed. You're just naming letters. You're just listing letters. In fact, I don't even have to list them in alphabetical order. I could just mix them up. I could go H, W, X. In fact, that's working. I feel the urine coming now. We'll keep going. P, X, Z, A, Y. Here we go. We're on to something here. So I don't know if you can hear that, but I am getting a trickle. M, T, or S. Now let's try this one. Q. Still working. I thought that might cause confusion, because it's one of those letters where you're not sure whether it's a consonant or a vowel. It was never quite covered properly in Sesame Street. The producers seemed to avoid it in the 70s. They were too busy taking drugs. So they never really covered what was to be done with the letter Q. Or maybe that, oh no, that's Y I'm thinking of actually. I had a set of alphabet blocks when I was a child. They came in a little plastic briefcase. Red plastic on one side and the see-through plastic on the other side, and it was like a little briefcase, and you had the letters of the alphabet, but they were in four rows of six, so there was only 24 blocks, and the letters X and Y were just on the backs of a couple of the blocks, so if you read the letters straight through when they were arranged in the case, it seemed to good that the alphabet ended S, T, U, V, W, Z. And that always caused immense confusion for me. I just thought that there were just 24 letters, and the other two were spares that you use when you can't quite spell a word, you dig out the other two letters. And really, that's quite true. But anyway, it's got me through the urination session of the week. It's the unplanned. Actually, the fact that this was an off-the-cuff urination session, it hasn't been planned. I wasn't even planning to record a show tonight. That's probably helped. So it's about taking a lot of pressure off myself. And in fact, there are people who make a lot of money selling drugs on the internet to help people urinate when they're under pressure and they feel they have to perform. And so they get these tablets to make them urinate. For example, when they're going to a urine test, people feel under immense pressure. They feel, I have to produce some piss here, or I'm going to be in trouble. It's a drugs test to see whether I'm on drugs that make me urinate. But I can't seem to produce any urine, so I better get these drugs to help me produce urine, or else they'll just arouse suspicion. So this website's all over the internet sending out spam to people advertising this. Now, of course, it's not spam if you're one of the people who wants it. It's a very helpful and informative email. It's just a little clever, well, not clever marketing, but just a little much needed marketing. It's pretty much like someone sending you a phone book with just the one entry that you need. Although I suppose the competition authority wouldn't like if you sent out a phone book that just had one entry for the particular type of business that you're looking for. I mean, if I'm looking for a company that produces drugs, I want to know all the different competing companies that produce that particular type of drug. Unless, of course, there's only one and they have a patent. Like the way Disney does on Donald Duck, until the patent eventually runs out. But that's just, you know, that's actually slowing me down now. I'm talking about Donald Duck. I find I've still a few trickles left, but they're very slow coming out. I'm gonna have to go back to counting letters again. Don't call it counting, Neil. Let's get away from the whole counting thing. I'm going back to listing letters in no particular order, with no pressure on me. So here goes. Q, Y, W. A W, of course, is an interesting letter because it's derived from the letter U, used twice. And that's when sometimes just U isn't enough. And if you say U, then that starts confusion because then you're using two letters. So if you say W, you know that it's just two U's stuck together. And of course, because they're stuck together, they're pronounced differently. They're pronounced Wubaloo or something. But apparently those laws of logic don't apply in grammar. Apparently when you put two U's together, it becomes W and the sound is W, which makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. I mean, double for a star has seven letters in it. It has D, O, U, E, L, and B in it. So I don't know, that's so odd. But if you have double U, that's eight letters. And then the W itself that it forms, so that's nine letters altogether. So, no. Anyway, I think we're pretty much done here, so I'll just flush the toilet. I'll flush all the water down into the sewage system. I don't know why I need to flush the toilet when I'm upstairs. I would have thought gravity would deal with the whole thing and that the water would instantly fall down towards the ground, which is several feet below this first floor of the house. But apparently that's not how it works. And it works with this tap when the water goes straight down the drain. And in fact, I have to put my hand in between the tap and the drain to stop some of the water for long enough for it to wash my hand. I suppose. I don't know, that's just another one of those things that I don't understand. And I suppose that's why we pay people to build a house for us and we don't build it ourselves. I mean, even the builders don't understand it. They have to subcontract to a plumber to have all this sort of thing dealt with. So I suppose just nothing in this life makes any sense.
Dustin Meehan. Some of you may know me as the voice that goes "Sit, Ubu, Sit" on your favorite family sitcoms. I'm here to tell you about the IntoYourHead.com guestbook. Everybody who's anybody is posted in the IntoYourHead.com guestbook, and you should too, because you haven't truly partaken in the show unless you've mingled with the humble and ignorant listeners such as myself. Visit the guestbook now at IntoYourHead.com.
Third of January 2008. It's a couple of days since all the excitement of New Year's Day and New Year's Eve and the junction at which they meet, which is midnight. And it's actually coming up to midnight now. It's about 4 minutes to midnight on the 3rd of January, or the 2nd, I'm not sure which. And I'm going to do a little experiment. I'm going to see whether counting down to midnight on the 3rd of January can be as interesting or as exciting as counting down to midnight on the 31st of December. And it's going to be interesting, because as far as I'm concerned, midnight is midnight. Whether it's midnight on New Year's Eve or midnight 3 days after, it should all be the same. In fact, it should be even more exciting now, because another year has passed. It's 2008 now. It was only 2007 on New Year's Eve, and another exciting year in our history has passed. We're 1 day closer to whatever way it's all going to end. We're 1 day closer to whatever apocalypse will happen, be it in 2 million years' time or tomorrow. It's edging closer. Our time is running out. And so we'll see how it goes. That's 3 minutes to 12 now. 3 minutes to zero, I suppose, on the 24-hour clock. So we certainly do need to go on the 24-hour clock if we're counting midnight as the end of the day. Because if you have a 12-hour clock, then there's two days in the period between midnight and midnight, and we don't want to end up on one of the days that ends at midday, because then this experiment won't work. So, for example, if I'd done this yesterday, let's say a minute to midday this morning, which would be yesterday under the 12-hour clock, then that would be a problem. So, luckily we haven't. I can tell that it's midnight because it's dark, so I can tell it's the nighttime one. We've got the right one. There was a 50% chance of that happening, and we got the right 50%, so that's cool. Now, I'm actually using an analog clock, so I don't have an exact countdown, and my eyesight isn't very good, so I can't see the second hand very well, but that's okay, because my second hand isn't working anyway, so I'll tell you what we'll do is we'll use the clock on my phone, on my cell phone, which doesn't have seconds, and it's actually only 5 to midnight on the clock on my cell, no, actually just gone 4 minutes to midnight on the clock on my cell phone, so we have a little extra time to play with. So it's 23:56. Now there's no seconds, so I just have to stare at the 56 and watch until it changes into 57, then 58, then 0, and then we'll know. And in fact, yep, I think that's pretty exciting. I mean, what are the chances of having a choice of clocks to choose on New Year's Eve and being so excited about it? I mean, if on New Year's Eve I was looking at my watch and it turned out that I couldn't read it or it was unreliable, I wouldn't go, I'll just switch to my cell phone now and we'll get an extra couple of minutes. No, I would have thought that. This is New Year's Eve, I don't want this wasted. I'm going to go in next door to the pub where there's a DJ, or turn on the television where they have a reliable clock and a picture of Big Ben striking midnight. But no, because it's a relaxed atmosphere here, I'm going to allow myself to be interrupted there because my wife is just coming in to say goodnight. Presumably she's not as excited about this 3rd of January midnight as she was about the New Year's Eve one, because there was no way she was going to bed before midnight at that. But anyway, looking at my phone here, it's 3 minutes to midnight, and as I was saying, If on New Year's Eve I'd found out that my watch or my cell phone weren't as reliable for the time as I thought they were, I would have gone and sourced out a more reliable source, because I would have felt under pressure to mark the beginning of the year at exactly the right time. But I don't now. I mean, my watch says it's midnight. By the way, happy 4th of January if you're going by my watch. But my cell phone says 2 minutes to midnight, and I'm going by my cell phone, so it's not midnight yet. And so I'm perfectly relaxed now. I feel under no pressure to enjoy myself. I don't feel I have to have a drink in my hand when it gets to midnight. Although that would be nice. Let's see. Yeah, I'll just nip to... Yeah, I'll just nip to the fridge here. And if I said, yeah, that would be nice twice, if I appeared to say it twice, that's because I accidentally pressed stop as I was getting up in my excitement to get a drink. You see, I'm more excited about the idea of getting a drink than I am about approaching midnight. So what does that tell you? I don't know. It probably misproves the theory. So yeah, we have a choice here. We have water or milk. Yeah, milk looks good. Well, when on New Year's Eve would you think that the option of a glass of milk would be nice? I wouldn't. So I'm getting even more excitement out of this than I would on New Year's Eve, definitely. But actually, I'm not going to have milk because it's the new year and I'm already on my new year diet, so I don't want to have any extra calories, and actually I don't want to drink after all, so to hell with that. What time is it? It's a minute, so I have to watch the 59 because I don't have seconds and watch when it changes to midnight. I can't do a countdown in seconds because I don't have seconds. As I say, I just have the 59. So I suppose I just have to count down in minutes. So I suppose we count down for 1 minute. And 1 minute to midnight has already passed. So we'll say one. So that's the minute counted. And the next stage in the counting process will be zero. Oh, it's got zero. Yeah, as I was going to say, the next stage in the counting process will be zero. And it's actually turned zero now. So it's now midnight on my cell phone. And it's got the date beside it. It's the 4th of January 2008. And yeah, that was great. That was different from New Year's Eve, I have to say. It wasn't the same experience at all. But that's not to say it was a bad one. I enjoyed it. I don't know about you. You're not here. You're listening in the future, so you didn't get to experience. You might even be listening during the day. So, and I don't know. It's probably not as exciting to you for you. But it was certainly an interesting experiment, and I thank you for taking part in it. Or listening to me taking part in it, and I look forward to hearing your views in the Stalkers Forum guestbook at intoyourhead.com, or you can also post a voicemail online at intoyourhead.com, and tell me what you think about this whole midnight thing, because I'd be absolutely fascinated, I can tell you. Now, if you listen closely to the end of the previous segments, you may have heard a sense of sarcasm in my voice. It wasn't actually sarcasm, it was irony. I was ironing my thoughts and trying to get them out onto the audio tape, and it didn't come out right. I wasn't concentrating on the tone of my voice, so I was concentrating on something more important, and that's the content. So if you're going to analyse everything I say and analyse the pitch and the tone of every word that comes out of my mouth, I'd rather you didn't. I'd rather you just concentrated on what I was saying. I mean, I could be saying something tremendously important. I could be telling you the meaning of life, quite frankly, and you'd say, yeah, it may well be the meaning of life, Neil, but why did you say it in that tone? I mean, well, why did you say it so sarcastically, or why did you say it so rudely, as if you were having a go at people who don't know the meaning of the life? Well, I wasn't thinking about what way I was saying it. I was just thinking about what I was saying. You know, there's more. When you're reading a book by Bill Clinton about how to succeed in the White House Oval Office. Do you say, Bill? Did you wrote that in very sloppy writing? Because I've looked at the original script. I don't trust text. I don't trust plain text. I got the original script from the publisher and had a look at it because I wanted to see what tone you were using. And I see that your writing was very sloppy at the end of that last sentence. So I got a handwriting analyzer to have a look at it. And the handwriting analyzer told me that if I was considering hiring you for a position, I should think twice. So I was glad that I wasn't really. I was glad that I wasn't considering you for a position, because I wouldn't have hired you. No, you wouldn't do that to Bill Clinton or anyone else who had written a book that you were writing. Not least because it would be very expensive to get a copy of the original manuscript. Or even a photograph of the original manuscript from the publisher, because if you want to get a photograph of the original manuscript, they just say, do you mean photocopy? And you say, no, I don't mean photocopy, I mean a photograph, the proper photograph, and then they'd have to get a really high definition photograph, because if you get a photograph of something, you have to make the photo really big so you can see what's in it, and then you probably have to get some sort of a spy lens, because the book is up on the shelf somewhere and you're taking a picture of it. And again, they'd go, are you sure you don't just want a photocopy of this bloody thing? I mean, we have this new technology, it's been here for about 30 years. every office in the goddamn world has it, except in countries where there hasn't been an entity yet, but that's very few. Every office in the developed world has a photocopier. Why don't you just make a fucking photocopy of it? And you'd have no answer to that, really, so then you'd start looking a little silly. So, that's what that's all about. So now you join me at 17 minutes past midnight on what's now the 4th of January. All the excitement of the change of days at midnight has all passed now. I'm over that. I'm nice and calm. There's no fireworks here to keep me awake. Actually, that's one of the other benefits of having a celebration of a midnight that's not on New Year's Eve. And once it's over, I can go to bed. I won't be kept awake by fireworks. I won't feel the need to stay up half the night. So I can even go to work the next day if I have a job. So there's no disruption to the economy. Unlike New Year's Eve, everyone has to have a day off the next day. Because they're up half the night watching these fireworks. Then thinking someone's put a hell of a lot of trouble into these fireworks, so I better watch them. And then I better watch the fireworks on TV, because they're in some big city somewhere, so someone's decided to film them, so they must be really good. But no, there's no fireworks tonight, so that's great. And I don't know why I'm staying up, really. I think I'll go to bed in a minute. I hear Joanne up there rustling about. I think she's going to read a book for a while, so I plan to be up there before she finishes reading the book. Or before she decides to abandon the book for the night and turn off the light, because I don't want to go up and watch her reading a book, because I can't see her. I'm lying there beside her and I can't see through the book, because I don't have x-ray vision, so there's not really much to see until she finishes reading. Of course, then she turns off the light and goes to sleep, so then I can't see her at all. And she can't see me because she has her eyes closed. She sleeps with her eyes closed, and she has eyelids, functioning eyelids. I'm not in the quarter of a percent of the population that has a wife that doesn't have any eyelids, who has holes in their eyelids caused by a nuclear explosion or some sort of disease. Very few people have that in their family. So that's that. So, basically, that's about it. Now, this is just a quick postscript to something I said earlier, and it's occurred to me. I mentioned that I was going to bed, and that my wife, if she'd gone to sleep, she wouldn't be able to see me because she's not one of the few people who has holes in her eyelids or no eyelids. It's just occurred to me that if she was asleep, she wouldn't be able to see me through the holes in her eyelids anyway, regardless of whether her eyes shone through the holes in her eyelids, or if she had no eyelids because she'd been asleep. You know, or once you're asleep, your eyes aren't functioning. They're functioning, but they're not connected up to your conscious mind. So whether her eyes are functioning or not, she wouldn't be able to see me. So that's just a little note, just to clarify. Experiment to test whether midnight on the 2nd of January felt the same or as exciting as midnight on the 31st of December. And I'm just in time for another experiment. It's a few minutes before midday, and I think we're going to have a little test and see if middays in general are as interesting as midnights. Because midnight, of course, you have the excitement of a new day beginning, if you take that your day starts at midday. I don't. My day starts at 6 a.m. when I get up and go off about my business. So as far as I'm concerned, the new day starts at 6 a.m. And if the day finishes around 6 in the evening, or whenever I get home from my dinner. So the stuff in between is just stuff in between days. I don't count them. And that's why I have less stress. I don't count every hour of the day as being part of the day. I just count the busy parts of it as being part of the day, and the rest is just the bit in between. I'm on a bit in between because I have nothing to do today. I've nowhere to. There isn't anywhere that I need to be. So I've one or two things to do at home that'll take an hour or so. So my day today is 1 hour long. And it's probably just as well then that I'm not relying on the positions of the planets or the sun rising or setting to get my business done, because of course the sun isn't going to live by my rules and decide that he's only got 2 hours of stuff to do today, so I'll rise at 10 a.m. and set at midday. The sun isn't going to do that sort of thing. The sun's been there for billions of years and it does its own thing. It's pretty much its own boss. It's a bit like a god in that way. In fact, it probably does boss God around if there is a god. Unless he's older than the sun, who can tell? You never know with these things. Yeah, it's not like a tree where you can just count the rings. And if you try to count the rings on the sun, you'd go blind. And then where would you be? You wouldn't know where you'd be because you wouldn't be able to see. You'd have to feel your way around. And I tell you, if you're trying to feel your way around the sun, you're going to get bloody sore blisters all over your hands. So, yeah, let's see what time it is now. It's further away from midday than I thought. My watch says it's something like 8 minutes to midday, so I think we'll go by the clock on my cell phone. And actually, we won't, because that says 12 minutes to midday. I don't think I'm going to be able to fill in 12 minutes with this sort of crap. So we'll go by my watch. Luckily, it's one of those watches that doesn't have numbers between the 12 main numbers, and it doesn't have markings, so it's not completely clear as to how many minutes are left until midday, so I can just give an underestimate of how long is left. So I'm going to say it's 1 minute to midday, so it could be anywhere between 5 to and midday now, because the hand is somewhere between the 11 and the 12. And apparently that means 5 to, of course, if this was a logical world, that would mean that if the big hand was at 11, it would mean it was 11 minutes to 12, or apparently, no, that's not how it works. So, the big hand is the one that counts the tiny little minutes, and the little hand is the one that counts the hours. That's fucking ridiculous as far as I'm concerned. If you follow that to its logical conclusion, you tell the date by having a little speck of dust pointing at a number. Yeah, because the smallest hand would symbolise the biggest amount of time passing. And then you get to the stage where you start needing a telescope or a microscope to read your calendar and see what date it is. That's, as far as I'm concerned, that's absolutely fucking ridiculous. So now it's 1 minute to midday. Yes, I'm beginning to think my watch has stopped. So we'll say it's 1 minute to midday. And I won't do a countdown, because that'd be a bit silly. It's not even midnight, so let's just watch the time again up here. Half a minute to midday. I can't say I feel any excitement, I would say. It's not comparable to midnight at all, this midday thing. 10 seconds. 9, 8... 6, 5, 2, 1. Yay, it's the afternoon. Not feeling anything. So I think that's that experiment pretty much over with. It was very uninteresting, the arrival of midday. Midnight is much more exciting, so that's sorted out once and for all. Now, this is a little final postscript. You notice that at the end of the last segment, the last word of the last segment is kind of half missing. The word is all, just to clarify, the word I was trying to say is all. In my excitement, I think I pressed the stop button too early again, and the word all got stuck in the machine. Only half of it came out, so I just wanted to clarify that. I suppose I could have just come back here, as I've done in the editing process, and then instead of recording this message, I could have just recorded myself saying the word all. But the weather has changed since I recorded that earlier today, and the background sound might be slightly different, so it would be very obvious to you that I'd put in the word all later, and that would just be fake, so I don't want to do that. So you can rest assured that the word I was trying to say is all, and it was emanating from my mouth after the stop button was pressed, but you didn't hear it. So I'm this is a reconstruction of my saying of the last word. I'll do it now for you. I'll do it officially. Here we go. This is a reconstruction of me performing the last word of the last segment of this podcast. All. And that's the end of the reading.